Our subject is parenting. Parenting for the modern age. And you might wonder, what is someone like me who is a celibate monk, never married in this lifetime? What am I doing here? And I have no children. What am I doing here talking to you about parenting for the modern age? Well, I am actually here for a particular reason. Have you got Prabhupada's books? No, you. Such a command. On your telephone? Okay. Now, I was hoping to do a little search and find a particular verse. Do you know the verse? Gurur nasasyat napatis chasasyat. What is it? Daivam chasasyam janani nasasyam. No, I don't have it here in front of me. Oh, Madhavi Prabhu, you got it there? It'd be good if I could read it rather than just sort of ad lib. Oh, it looks like we've got it here. Hare Krishna. Gaitiya up. Oh, look. I got it on VedaBase online. What more could you ask for? Fortunately, I've got my glasses on. Does it expand? Oh, it does. Look at that. Shoo, magic. Okay, here we go. Well, first of all, repeat after me, please. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Right, let's see, what verse is it? Ah, I was looking in the same chapter. How's that for a good excuse? Okay, let us begin by reading this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, because it's really relevant and very much to the point, although in a broader context than just parenting, but specifically including parenting. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 5, which is Maharaj Rishabha's teachings to his son, if I remember correctly. Doesn't say here. Gurur nasasyat, swajano nasasyat, pita nasasyaj, janani nasasyat, daivam natatsyan, na patis chasasyan, na mochayed ya samupeta mrityum. And the translation is, one who cannot deliver his or her dependents from the path of repeated birth and death should never become a spiritual master, a father, a husband, a mother, or a worshipable demigod. Interesting, isn't it? Let's see. Well, there's fairly extensive, there's a really quite extensive purport here by Srila Prabhupada. I don't think I'll read it at this point. Let us just say a few more prayers. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Bastityade Shatarne Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasati Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vajkavata Rubhyas Jai Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Let me just read this, the translation, of the verse again, just so we get it clear what's the idea of the verse. As I said, of course, it is addressing a broader type of context, but also very specifically this context that we're looking at. One who cannot deliver his dependence from the path of repeated birth and death should never become a spiritual master, a father, a husband, a mother, or a worshipable demigod. This is very, very important. You know, the very first thing it says is Gurur Nasasyat. And we read the translation. One should not become a guru. Na mochied ya samupeta mrityum. Unless you can deliver your dependence, in the case of the guru, that means the disciples, from repeated birth and death. I think generally many of us would be able to appreciate that point, because I think so many of us at least have heard about false gurus, false teachers, misleading teachers. I remember when I was young, I must have still been a teenager, something like that. And the Beatles came out with a very famous song with a very strange title, I Am the Walrus. Can you imagine what a song with a title like that may be about? It's too crazy, really. But in there, you know, the Beatles were sort of accepted as gurus. At least, well, they really were, by many people. And if they made some pronouncement about something, so many, and I mean millions of young people would just say, yes, right. So in this song, John Lennon, I think, sings, I am you, and you are me, and we are all together. And I remember the first time I heard that, I was with a group of my young friends, and we were all alternatively minded people, fed up with the system and everything, and we heard that, and sort of into quasi-spiritual, or even we could say directly pseudo-spiritual things. And we heard this, I remember being there with this group of young people, young friends, and hearing this, and all of us, we all turned to each other, and we all went, wow. But because we thought, ah, that's deep. I am you, and you are me. I am you, and you are me. And we thought it was deep, but you know, if you think about it for 2 seconds, if you have, you know, a functional brain, at least a somewhat functional brain, you'll understand, I am not you, and you are not me. Of course, it is too obvious. I am me, and you are you. So, in this world, there are many people who teach many things, which are sort of quasi-spiritual or presented as being spiritual, but they're not really. And in Krishna consciousness, you know, I'm not addressing this point. This is not the point of the presentation, but just by way of a small introduction, particularly for devotees, people who've read Prabhupada's books, participated, attended our programs, heard the philosophy to some degree, such people are not easily taken advantage of or not easily fooled by such things as this, that I am you or you are me, or that it's all one, or that God is light. God is light. There's the light there. See? It's not God. Of course, God gives light. He gives enlightenment. But God is God. God is the Supreme Person. So particularly for devotees and people who are associated with Krishna consciousness for some time, they're not so easily fooled by these misleading so-called gurus, spiritual masters, spiritual teachers. And then we can understand that to become a guru, to become a guru, this is not a small thing. This is not just like, oh, okay, yeah, I'll become a guru. When do I start? It's not like that. It's a big thing. It's a big thing. So here, various other situations in life are mentioned in the same breath. In the same breath. One should not become a guru, or a husband, or a father, or a mother, or a demigod, unless one can deliver one's dependence. For the guru, of course, that means the disciples. For the husband, well, it's meant to include the whole family. Husbands, I believe, I think, I seem to detect there may be a few husbands in this room. Am I right? My antenna tells me. I think we've got a few husbands here. And normally people think, you know, young people, young men, young women, a young man is thinking, yeah, I'd like to become a husband. In most cases, It's quite rare to find a young man who even amongst the devotees, who seriously wants to just focus on Krishna and serving Krishna and becoming Krishna conscious, and is not really interested in becoming a husband. The great majority are. You know, of course, some of them may put on an act like they're not. Who, me, want to get married? Nah. But it's usually fairly, you know, easy to see through. And after a while, they give in. So, one should not become a husband. It's not just become a husband so you can have a wife and then, you know, have children and live together, and you know your husband, well, at least she'll wash my clothes, sure, and cook for me, but not beans every day, please. But there's more to becoming a husband. This verse is stating it very clearly. The duty of the husband is not just to provide financially. And let's face it, you know, when I was a child, means like 50, 60 years ago, my father and his friends, they provided for their families, and their wives did not work. But nowadays, the husband works and the mother works. The wife works too. But anyway, in that sort of more classical sense, it is not just that the husband has to provide, you know, a dwelling and food and transport and clothing, etc. But according to this verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, the husband has to be able to deliver his dependents. Otherwise, really, just as a person should not become a guru, which, you know, for most of us, I think is fairly clear, unless we're going to be able to really help people to progress in their Krishna consciousness. But in the same breath, it is being said, a person shouldn't become a husband unless they can do the same thing. So any of you young men who are just thinking, yeah, you know, met a nice girl, let's see how it goes, and you know, in a little while she'll invite me to see her parents and all that. And no. At least what it should be, as much as a person should only be a guru if they can help people to progress and go back to Godhead, similarly a person shouldn't become a husband unless he can help his wife and the children also go back to Godhead. A husband... This is not my telephone. I don't know what to do to get the screen back. Do I whack it? Oh! Here it is. Should never become a spiritual master, a father, a husband, a mother, or worshipful demigod. So one shouldn't become a husband, one shouldn't become a father. And ladies, dear ladies, Hare Krishna, all glories to you. But one shouldn't even become a mother unless one can actually deliver the children. Mother means particularly, obviously, for the children, dealing with the children. You know, of course, a lot of this is lost nowadays just by dint of the Western culture. You know the famous story. There was a lady in America who was like a traditional woman, housewife and mother, and not working and coming home late and putting a TV dinner in the microwave or something like that. But she would really look after the family. So anyway, the story goes, it's a true story, that this woman had to go in to some government office, maybe to apply for a passport or to apply for something. And so she was interviewed by a clerk, and the clerk said, okay, what's your name? Okay, wrote down the name. What's your date of birth? Wrote down the date of birth. What's your address? Wrote down the address. What's your occupation? She said, I'm a housewife and mother. The man stopped, like this, sort of, what happened? He said, no. I mean, what do you do? And she said, I'm a housewife and mother. And he thought, he said, no, you don't understand. I mean, what's your occupation? What work do you do? I'm a housewife and mother. And the man thought, and he said, oh, you mean you're unemployed? And it was too much, she walked out. But she had to do this for whatever reason, so she came back later, some days later, but now she was ready. What's your name? Okay. Date of birth? Okay. Address? Okay. Occupation? Child development technologist. And the clerk said, very good. So welcome to Kali Yuga. So just this verse here is just as an introduction, really. What does it mean to become a parent? You know, of course there are certain basic things. Feed the children. Sort of pacify them when they get disturbed. See that they're clean, they have clothes to wear, and all that sort of thing. You know, don't just, when you zip out to the office or the factory or the shop, wherever you're working, don't just dump them in the hands of granny. And don't just, with all due respect, just dump them in the hands of the maid from Umlazi either. And I'm serious. I'm just really serious. Yeah. So, the mother, among other things, has to develop the children. Father is also part of the program, of course, but the mother is the main person. The mother is the main person. So the mother has to grow the children in personal terms. And of course here, this is Lord Rishabhadev speaking. He's an incarnation of Krishna. He is God. So he is big authority, ultimate authority. And his point is, in regard to parenting, that one shouldn't become a father, and particularly one shouldn't become a mother, because as we said, it is the main responsibility is on the mother, actually, for developing the children. Because ideally, she will be with them 24 hours a day. 24 hours a day. And working with them the whole day during, you know, the daytime. So, the verse was saying what? One shouldn't become a father or a mother unless one can help one's children to get out of material existence and go back to Godhead. You know, like feeding them, being a good cook. Some of these girls who I know, but I know so many people from all over, and I know that a generation ago, because I was around 25, 30 years ago dealing with the people, and a generation ago, at least in Indian families, by the time a girl was 13, 14, 15, she was a good cook. Good cook. And not just, you know, like beans curry. Baked, I can cook baked beans in the tin, you know. I know how to cook. But by that age, 12, 13, 14, they were expert, actually expert. I met a girl the other day. She just got married. And you know when she started learning to cook? The day after she got married. Anyway, this is all very basic. The mother must be a good cook and able to deal with the children. You know, children get all upset on a regular basis, particularly when they're smaller, and even, well, you know what the saying is, little children, little problems, big children, big problems. Oh yes. So to look after them emotionally, provide for them, see they have clothes, see they get washed, see their noses are not running all over them. All this is very basic stuff, okay? This is not really like the important part of being a mother, although it must be there. But what Richard the Dave is saying here is that you have to be able to prepare your children spiritually. This is real parenthood. Real parenting. That you will develop your children. You will train your children. You will know how to train your children systematically, step by step, in progressive ways, which make sense and which work. You'll know how to train your children so they actually develop and become devotees and become more devotees and then more devotees. In other words, they progress spiritually. Yeah. So one thing that a mother and a father should understand, but particularly the mother, should understand, and don't mind me saying this, please, that children should not be taken to be toys that we play with. Children are not toys just to amuse us. We play around with them, make them laugh, and then we laugh. You know, all this sort of thing. Children are not toys. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the spiritual master of Srila Prabhupada, he wrote an essay about Krishna killing the demon Vatsasura in Vrindavan. Vatsasura was one of the demons that Krishna killed. It's described in the Bhagavatam. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of our great Acharya's spiritual teachers from like 150 years ago, roughly. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has given an analysis of the demons killed by Krishna in Vrindavan in terms of how those demons represent different anathas or obstacles, challenges for our progress in Krishna consciousness. Vatsasura represents challenges for four children for their advancement, things which may hold a child back from progressing spiritually, and things which hold parents back in their dealings with their children, which hold the parents back from their advancement. Isn't that interesting? The advancement of the children can be obstructed if the parents don't look after them properly, and the advancement of the parents can be obstructed if they don't look after the children properly. Isn't that interesting? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, in that essay, he makes the point that progress in Krishna consciousness for a child is no different than progress in Krishna consciousness for an adult. In other words, a child can progress in Krishna consciousness no less than an adult can progress in Krishna consciousness. Of course, in terms of strategy, exactly how we deal with the child and train the child because of their childishness, or their youthfulness if they're slightly older children, then the strategies may differ. But in principle, the program is the same. Children can be trained to progress in Krishna consciousness and can actually advance and become, you know, they can become very amazing devotees, actually. One of my god sisters, Malati Devi Dasi, a very senior disciple of Srila Prabhupada and GBC member, her daughter, Subhadra, who is now like 45 years old, something like that. When Subhadra was three, preschool, three, she was so Krishna conscious. When they were in India with Prabhupada, they had to take trains sometimes. And on the platform, people are waiting for the train. And there would be some businessman smoking a cigarette. 3-year-old Subhadra would walk up to her. I mean him, businessman. Subhadra would walk up to him and tell him, "You shouldn't smoke cigarettes. You're in Maya. Stop." And you know, every time they'd stop. And then she'd say to them, "Do you know who Krishna is?" And they would normally, by this point, they'd be stunned and cigaretteless, and they wouldn't be able to say anything. And she'd say, "Krishna is God." Yeah. Anyway, in principle, our point is that parents, and particularly the mother, should actually try to train the children systematically. Just like a school, you know, just like a kindergarten is sort of somewhat systematic, and schools are definitely systematic. So the mother, to parent properly, the mother and the father, but mainly the mother, should try to train the children to get a taste for Krishna consciousness. So how do you do that? Well, you know, we don't. Oh, I'm actually 1 minute over time. How's that? What should I... Are you next? May I take a few minutes of yours? Is that okay? Yeah. You know, I remember when I visited the temple first in London, I was 21. January 1973, I was 21. They stuck some beads in my hand and they said, yeah, you know, we chant the mantra on each bead. Okay, okay. And we go around the whole string and we do 16 rounds every day and go ahead. It's my first day visiting a temple. So I sort of, you know, got the idea. Although initially I thought you had to go both ways around the beads to do one round. So anyway, I started chanting, and it was difficult. It was really difficult. But I wanted to do it, so I persevered. Not so much because of how they were dealing with me or encouraging me, but I just wanted to do it. Now, with a child, you know, in order to get a child to develop a taste for Krishna consciousness, please don't pressurize the child to chant. Like, if you don't eat your broccoli, I'll make you chant one more round. Punishment. You know, I'm touching here on a couple of elements. With children, you have to make Krishna consciousness appear. I mean, not just appear, it is very nice. But you have to bring out the fact to them that it is very nice. It is fun. It is enjoyable. And then the child thinks, it's fun, I want it. But if you try to train the child to become Krishna conscious by forcing them to chant and forcing them to get up early and forcing them to do different Krishna conscious things, then when they become old enough, as they start thinking for themselves and becoming their own person, you know, into their teens, that stage of their life, then they're just going to reject it. At least it's very likely. So one of the skills of parenting for the modern age in Krishna consciousness, and you know how to do it, the details, you have to think about that. But the principle is, show them how Krishna consciousness is nice. Show them how chanting is nice. All these things are nice and they're fun. And children, you know, who are very much into fun and having a good time and what feels good, then they'll want to do it. Yes. And you know, this is the last thing, I'll just throw this in. If all else fails, try bribery. The bribery. Don't tell the gentleman from the ANC who was here a little while ago that I said this. But bribery is extremely effective. It really works. It works big time. So you can also bribe children. Okay, you chant around. look at these nice sweets. Chant around, I'll give you a sweet. It has been shown to work, actually. You know, not that one should do it all the time, but from time to time. So the basic principle is, devotees, parenting for the modern age means strategically, very intelligently and systematically, which involves doing research, getting resources, like books for different ages and all these types of things. In these ways, we train the children to be Krishna consciousness, but in such a mood, they like it, they look forward to it, they're happy to be devotees. And that's the success of your parenting. Otherwise, you may have PhD child, you may have double PhD child. Yeah. You're a devotee, your child's double PhD, but, you know, he or she is a meat eater and just, you know, a materialistic person. And what is that PhD? Prabhupada said, plow department. Just a way of getting a job so you can earn money. And what's the value of that? You know, even the cockroaches are getting their food and have a place to live. Yeah. Or our architect and engineer for building our temple in Chatsworth, Yaj Ram Prabhu, he had a degree in architecture and design. First of all, he got bachelor's of architecture and design, BAD. Then he got master's of architecture and design, MAD. So, you know what? There's no real point in having some big qualification, big money, if you're not Krishna conscious. And there's no point in having children who are so successful materially if they're not Krishna conscious. So please, with your children, train them very nicely, very, with great care and kindness from your heart, so that they actually become pure devotees. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. I got a few questions, but you know, we're going to have to do it next time. Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah. And you know, let me tell you an extremely important thing. You know, I've seen in Krishna consciousness, I hate to say it, I have seen parents who were devotees, very committed themselves to their own Krishna consciousness, but they were hopeless with their children. They were hopeless. And as a result, their children became little monsters, actually. Yeah. There was this one child who I knew. Her name was Krishna Mayi. Sounds nice, doesn't it? She was a monster. She would go next door to the parents' place and eat chicken and come back and tell her parents, who are like very serious devotees, but, you know, totally unsuccessful at parenting, that, ha, 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 I just ate chicken. Ah. Really, she would do that. She would actually do that. And I've seen, well, I must admit, things are improving. But still, in so many cases, they're not so good. And you get children who drop out of Krishna consciousness. You know, they've been involved. But then they reach a certain point, particularly their teens and later teens, And they just take a left turn into left field. Really, and just go for it into the nonsense. And I find it very disappointing, because I know a lot of these children, and I know the parents, and I know how disturbing it is for the parents. Having said that, I also know some parents who themselves, at a certain point, took a turn to the left and went off into left field and ran off with someone else. Just yesterday, I won't mention any names or places, but we are talking about such a person, nice devotee wife, and the man, just like, he's 45 years old, you know, a middle-aged person, ran off with some other woman who's not a devotee. And I'm not suggesting it would have been better if he'd run off with a devotee. But, you know, it's one of my great concerns, and it's really become more and more of a concern recently, because I've just seen in front of my eyes these happen in the last 48 hours, and, you know, the last couple of few years. So we have this book here. It is called The Four Goals of Family Life. And it is a how-to book. How to do it. How to do family life in Krishna consciousness. Detailed book. It is 360 or something pages. So in other words, it's substantial. There's a real lot of good information written by, do any of you remember Mother Jagannath Ishwari, who was here in South Africa for many years? Now she's in England. She's a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, and she has a couple of excellent, excellent children who are devotees. So she's been married many, many years, like 30 years, something like that. And she's, in other words, she's been in the trenches, and she's done it, been there, done it. She wrote this book, and she appealed to me personally, because I know her personally, and we're sort of in touch a little bit, and I know her husband quite well. She appealed to me to get some copies for the devotees in South Africa. This is about a year ago. The book was written maybe a year and a half ago, something like that. So I said, okay, I'll do it. Then in the meantime, there are some excellent recommendations from highly experienced household devotees that it really is valuable and helpful. Plus some young householders read it and said it helped them just kind of get established in their Krishna conscious household life. So therefore we had this book. And, you know, I really strongly recommend that if either, one, you're married, or two, you are not married but, you know, thinking about it, moving in that direction, or even three, you know, you haven't really thought about it too much yet, 90, it's well over 95% of devotees marry. It's really the great majority. This is an excellent book to help existing marriages, especially spiritualize them further, develop them further in Krishna consciousness, and to help young people who are just entering or going to enter household life to prepare themselves and gear up and get focused in the right ways. So this book, it's meant to be 90 rands. They're selling it in the book tent, I believe, for 75. Please don't tell them, okay, that is one of the conditions. If you take one now, you can have it for 60 rands. And, you know, I didn't write the book. I don't want to be sort of, you know, conceited or anything like that. But if you really want it, I could sign it for you. But, you know, I leave that up to you. But so anyway, let me close there on that note. I'll go and sit over there on the side. Whoever likes a copy, please come and see me. And there we go. Happy Grihastha Ashram. Srila Prabhupada ki.